Welcome to the Home Tech Podcast Show number 12 for February 16th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison. Again, we are here on a Wednesday night. We had to move the schedule to accommodate some work-related things for me, but a couple guys were able to move their schedule around and join me tonight. First off, Brian Burgess. Brian's been on the show since the very beginning. He is a blogger. I always say a longtime blogger at How To Geek. I'm going to stop saying that, Brian, because you're blogging other places now, right, at this point?
Yeah, there's plenty on my plate. So.
Yeah, simplehelp.net is your current place.
Yeah, that's the main one.
That's the main one right now?
Yep.
Very good. And again, last week, Andrew Morris joined us from you're in Melbourne, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I am, Jim. Yep. Hi, everybody.
And good to have you last week. Appreciate you making the time difference. Although not too bad for you, noon your time, 7 p.m. Central for us, and so not such a bad switch for you.
Yeah, it's ideal. It's pretty good.
Yeah, we do catch it.
It's a bit of fun.
We do catch in the middle of the day, so we're catching you on your lunch break, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
Good to have you in here. Christian, who normally joins us, Christian Johnson, is detained at the moment, and so we're waiting for him to jump in, and he's going to give me a little ping when he's ready, and we'll bring him in here in a few minutes. So, busy week of technology out there, although I do want to start, before we start talking, Brian and I were kind of, I think we were talking a little bit offline via Skype the other day, and I've done some soul searching about this podcast. So, you know, 12 weeks ago or so when we started this podcast back in November, it seems like it was a year ago, by the way, but 12 weeks ago when we started this podcast, you know, my original intent was that this would be a podcast for the average guy, right, the average tech person, how to kind of handle the average stuff that's technology related in their home. We talked about some easy how-to stuff for Windows. We tried to gear it towards I don't want to say the beginner, but maybe someone who has basic technical problems with their PC, or how do you manage your media center or your Xbox or your PS3 or your Wii? What if you have multiple computers in the house? You know, how do you handle your car audio? That's now getting very technical. Well, so I invited a bunch of tech guys, right? You're all pretty savvy tech guys. So I invited a bunch of tech guys to the show. And for about 3 weeks, we did pretty well with those topics. And then it quickly morphed into a pretty advanced tech show. And Brian, you and I even threw some names around. I thought maybe I should change the name of the podcast. And
right.
So you sent me some geek tech and tech geek and how to tech geek and some names around some technical stuff. Andrew, one of the things, you know, you can kind of come at this fresh a little bit because you've just been with us for 2 weeks. But, you know, my original intent was to reach an audience that struggles with technology. Although if they're struggling with technology, are they really listening to podcasts? And I guess that was kind of the question I had. And so you've listened from the outside. Any thoughts on from a target audience perspective? Should we be trying to reach the geeks who are listening to the podcasts, or do we really go after the folks that aren't and try and get them to come into listening to podcasts? Any thoughts on that, guys? Wow, I've inspired incredible. Brian, I'll throw it over to you. Brian, any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, like we were saying, you know, I mean, it was originally geared at the average person, but you know, we're all pretty, like you're saying, tech savvy, and it kind of morphed into something other than topics geared towards the average guy, I think. So I don't know.
Yeah, Andrew, what kind of podcasts do you listen to today?
I came across to the average guy from the home server show. So, you know, I'm one of the people who jumped on the home server show because, you know, I had a reason to start learning about it. So, you know, I deal with a corporate server base every day in my life. So, you know, to move into the home world, it's a little different. So,
So you know, you listened at homeservershow.com, and then you and then I announced, hey, I'm doing this new podcast, and you said, hey, I'll check this out. I want to try this. You know, I want to try this.
Yeah,
out.
So, yeah, you know. So
besides, no, go ahead. Your bit of.
I was just going to say, you know, some would say you're a podcasting stalker. So you know, in you know, I listen to Ian Dixon from a media center perspective, and you know, I listen to the Home Server Show and a few other mobile tech ones. Yeah. You know, the one that Jose Ortiz used to do and whatnot. So, you know, sort of got a bit of a general interest, but, you know, it's one of those things where you like to give back a bit, and I think that's probably why you started off doing it, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. One of my passions is helping people. You know, I get we were just talking about this before we started the show. Is we, you know, we are the tech guys for our friends. And I'll be honest, I got tired of I got tired of saying the same things over and over and over and over again to them. And I thought, well, shoot, if I could put this stuff in a blog, then I wouldn't have to, you know, I wouldn't have to do that stuff all the time. And then, of course, since I podcasted with the Home Server Show, and I love podcasting, and there's jokes out there about me, you know, oh, you better be careful. Jim will start a new podcast about it. but I started this to try and reach those folks that maybe would need that help and that would listen. So Andrew, the question I have for you is the non-technical person who needs that kind of help, and if we're doing a podcast along those lines, are those people listening to podcasts? I mean, I guess, has the podcast idea gotten out there enough that the average guy is listening to podcasts at this point, do you think? Your opinion?
Yeah, look, I tend to think that, you know, the average guy or girl, as it is, you know, the person who's a bit like my wife, you know, she listens to podcasts, but she doesn't listen to anything that's technical related. So, you know, that's why she's got people like me. So,
yeah.
You know, I think your original pretext was probably on the ball. You know, the podcast is to target the people who help the other members in their family and in their life. But whether or not, you know, the whole concept of a podcast that's technically related is, you know, too much for those people or not, I don't know.
Yeah,
for the people
so
who need the help.
Do I hear you saying the podcast for the average, and I actually had this, the average tech guy, you know, the guys trying to help, or gals, right? We like girl geeks as well.
I love girl geeks.
Hey, I got to say this on the podcast, but Brian had a date scheduled for tonight, and he changed it to be on the show. So, Brian, you get the dedicated podcaster award.
I'll never live that down. Thanks a lot, Jim.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I appreciate you doing that. But so, you know, so maybe the focus, and this is kind of where I think we've been heading, and one of the things that I think we just naturally talk about is technology for the technology people to help other people, right? So how do we help people help people? Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Vinyl.
Yeah, it's sort of the peer support group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and one of the things, you know, that we did on the Home Server Show, of course, we focus in on backup and home server related products. And if people don't know what I'm talking about, that's the homeservershow.com. That's a podcast by Dave McCabe. Most of the listeners that I have, though, I think have come over from the Home Server Show to listen at this point. So I'm sure they're aware of that. One of the things I noticed in that show is we were kind of limited by the name, right? The Home Server Show. And I picked a pretty generic name for a podcast in home tech, hoping we could cover a variety of technical topics and never maybe get painted into a corner, you know, when it came to topics. So I guess in all that, I'm interested now. We have 12 episodes, and I told Brian way back when we started that we wouldn't even consider changing anything until we'd done at least 10 of these. And so we're past that. But I guess I'd be interested. We have a couple hundred listeners now a week. So I know there's people out there listening. We're getting well over 100 downloads each week. I know some folks are listening to it streaming. I don't really want to send out a survey, but if you would take a second and send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and tell me why you listen and what you'd like to hear, and And maybe some suggestions. I don't know. I think we've still got some learning to do on how to reach the audience. And I'm all for a podcast for tech guys that, you know, that's for tech guys because they're probably going to listen to it. If that's the case, then we need to kind of, I think, maybe revamp the format just a smidgen, not much. But maybe just a smidgen to reach them and not necessarily worry about the average person who's probably not listening to the podcast anyways. just being honest there. So send us an email if you get a chance. That would be great. podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and that'll give us some ideas of what's going on. Vinyl Freak in chat had mentioned, you know, if you build it and they will come. I'd be really interested in what you mean by that. So you can either put that in chat or and I guess that means if you do it and you're true to what you're doing, eventually people start following it. And maybe that's what you mean, but it's real important to me that we build a community that really works to help people with their technology problems. And so if we can do that, I sure would like to. Okay. Enough about that. Guys, one of the other things I want to talk about, and you know, Brian, you're a pretty hardcore blogger because you do a lot of help in how to type blogging, that's out there. You do very quick hitting, this is how you get it done, right? I mean, that's the essence of your blog stuff?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, just, you know, showing screenshots, the steps, and how to accomplish whatever it is that, you know, whatever the topic is. So, yeah.
And if you want an example of that, simplehelp.net and look for are you Mystic Geek there?
I'm Mystic Geek there, yep.
And that's Brian's work. Andrew, are you blogging anywhere at this point?
At the moment, I'm not. I'm a bit of a frustrated blogger, I guess. I've had three or four goes over the years of, you know, trying to be dedicated about it. And I think, like a lot of people, you get to a bit of a hiatus where you don't have that level of, I don't want to say commitment, but you don't commit enough to be able to keep up with it.
Yeah.
It's a bit like photography, you know. I mean, I'm a pretty passionate, you know, photographer and, you know, registered a domain name and whatnot, and I didn't even get around to getting up a gallery. So, you know, I've probably got an archive of, you know, 80,000, 100,000 images of water ski racing, which is what I used to photograph. And, you know, you used to do okay selling the odd image, but, you know, actually getting everything online.
Is it just a time deal for you? I mean, is it...
Yeah, it's time, yeah. I mean, you know, for want of a better excuse, you know, you got to find the balance between family time and, you know, we only got married a year or so ago, so, you know, you do get in trouble if you're spending too much time in the in the cave, quote unquote. Yeah.
I don't know what that feels like at all. yeah. Brian, keep going, Andrew.
Oh, I was just going to say, so it's not lack of desire; it's just lack of time.
Yeah. It's kind of getting on it. Brian, you're blogging for other people's blogs, but do you have your own that you do?
I have mysticgeek.com.
Okay. And so you bought that URL, right? You went out and bought that domain.
Yeah. But, you know, like Andrew said, it's just having the time to actually work on it. So.
Yeah, and I think a lot of folks kind of suffer from that same, you know, they get moving and the first, you know, there's kind of a rush in the first couple posts or even just in the idea that you have around blogging. You know, a lot of folks want to, you know, they've got high ideals for what they're about to get themselves into. They put out their first post and then they realize just how much work it actually is to do a blog. I mean, you've got to, depending upon the format that you do, right? You got to write it out. You got to edit it. You don't want it. I mean, it doesn't need to be perfect, but you don't want it to suck either. Add a few pictures to it. That first post is a rush. You might do a second post, and then usually I see people's blogs start to drop off after that. Same pattern for me. I started a blog about 2.5-3 years ago, got after it for a month. Got about 6 posts out, and then the next month about 3 posts, and then the next month about 1 post. So if you're listening to this and that's been your pattern, you know, I think one of the things I've learned over the last couple years on that is is to set some, if you're going to go into blogging, and I'm really for blogging. I think blogging, for at least for me, and I think everybody maybe approach it different. You know, Andrew, you might have wanted some recognition or be able to sell some of your photos, right? That would kind of be your goal for blogging. Is that at the time?
That's right. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Brian, why would you do a personal blog? I mean, what are you looking for in that?
Well, you know, that brings up a good point. You know, I mean, what do you want your blog to be? Do you want to monetize it, or do you just want it to be, you know, kind of a personal daily diary type, you know, posts on it? But with mine, I write for so many other sites that I think with mine, I'm going to start writing opinion pieces on technology.
Good.
You know, yeah. Break out of the format that I'm kind of stuck in with, you know, like,
yeah, it's good to hear.
And, you know.
So. Yeah, I've encouraged you to do that. And I think you've got some good opinion stuff behind the scenes there. So let me encourage you to do that. You know, one of the things I found, and Andrew, chime in on this, if you would, is I kind of blog, at least for me, and my running blog is incredibly therapeutic for me just to write. I've always told people I would blog and write even if nobody was looking at it. I mean, it's kind of a written history of what I'm going through while I'm doing it, and I don't need necessarily people to read that. I mean, it's just a therapeutic to sit down, crank it out, have a memory. I love to go back and read my own stuff. So I guess from that sense, it's a diary, right? It's a public diary. I love when people share it with me. As you approach, so you did the photography stuff. Have you ever thought of writing to write?
Yeah, look, I mean, I on a day-to-day basis, I mean, I write because I have to.
Yeah.
I guess I fell into the trap when I was blogging of using it as a bit of a cathartic exercise, you know, just to get stuff out of my system, and it ends up being very negative when you approach blogging from that perspective. So,
okay.
You know, I think if it's, you know, that was also, you know, a phase that I was going through in my life, you know,
sure.
Wasn't getting a lot of good rolls of the dice, if you will. And
okay.
It's one of those things, you know, I guess the influences in your life at the time is what you portray, and that wasn't where I wanted to be portraying myself at the time.
Sure.
As well.
Sure.
And you know, you see a lot of, I don't know. I mean, I read a lot of angry blogs, and you know, you look at people's personal stuff, and I think if you're blogging a lot and you're blogging across multiple platforms and interest points, you tend to get your message across in a more positive, uplifting manner. Whereas if you're only blogging in one forum, it tends to be, if that's the way your ilk is, you tend to become a little bit negative.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point there in that, you know, we call that flaming, right? When people flame in blogs. And I, you know, I don't use my platform, especially my running blog. So I have theaverageguy.tv, right? That's this site that we promote all these podcasts through. But then I have theaverageguy.me, and that's all the running stuff that I do. I'm currently kind of in a running phase of my life where I'm doing a lot of fitness and stuff. And I really try and keep that positive and not, but you're right. And the people have used the blogosphere as a avenue to kind of vent their, you know, I hate,
explain, yeah.
Yeah, I hate apple.com, or, you know, why I hate palm.com, or, you know, IBM, I hate IBM, whatever, right? HP, I hate HP, whatever. And those things turn very negative, and it seemed that negativity seems to attract kind of an audience in some way. But I don't think that's very helpful. I mean, it sure, you need to vent sometimes and get some of those things out. But in the blogosphere, I always appreciate folks who are out there adding kind of positive content, you know, to the web. There's enough negative stuff out there. You know, I like to see people add positive stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was WordPress.com or WordPress.org did a bit of a analysis as to who was using WordPress and what they were using it for. And some of the heaviest users of WordPress, I mean, one of them's a guy down here in Melbourne who's a content generator, a guy called Duncan Riley. And, you know, his website was described as a diary, which I thought was quite interesting because it's anything but. You know, he collaborates data together from multiple sources and publishes it into an interface via WordPress. Yet it was considered to be a diary. So I thought that was kind of interesting as to how that one came out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of interesting things in interesting ways to blog. One of my friends, Kerry Adams, on the fitness tech side, has a blog that's just exploded. Brian, you and I were talking about clean eating, and we've been talking a lot about that on the Fitness Tech Podcast. And her numbers have gone through the roof as she started talking more about this, and in a very short period of time has gathered quite a crowd around her. And she's even now, she got picked up by the Spartan Race team to be on their blog, and part of their blog section on their website. And so, again, she's very positive. She's putting recipes and nutrition information out there and kind of talking about a lot of positive things. Like, she's getting a lot of traction on that.
That's the important thing when you're starting a blog is to, you know, blog on what you know, what interests you.
Yeah.
And then it might, you know, help out as far as, you know, continually creating content if it's something you're passionate about.
No, and I think you hit it right on the head there, Brian, that you've got to blog about stuff you're passionate about. Otherwise, it just gets kind of, you know,
it's
it just
not becomes, fun.
It becomes work. And I always tell people, you know, and I learned this from a professor when I was in college. You know, I said, Jim, you've got to teach from your overflow. It's the stuff that's coming. You know, it's the stuff that's pouring out of you that is the really good stuff. And so, I've always tried to approach it from a standpoint of what am I working on today? What is kind of what's my extra? What's my overflow? What can I give? So, really, these podcasts that I do, you know, we've got this one. I have this fitness tech one, and I do a lot of fitness. I have a financial tech one. I'm very interested in the financial world, and so. A lot of people ask me, well, how do you start three and maintain three podcasts every week? And I say, well, because we sit down and we do it quick and it's done out of my overflow. And so I think the number one thing I would tell people is if you're going to blog, blog from what just naturally comes out of you and you're teaching people anyways. And it doesn't have to be big and fancy. All right. So real quick, one of a couple things I want to cover from a blogging standpoint, then we'll move on. Is I just encourage people, go out and start a free blog. I mean, go to Blogspot or WordPress. Those are the two big ones at this point. LiveWriter works perfect with those. Start a free account and write a few things. I mean, just get some stuff out there and don't be afraid. I've talked to a lot of people, blogs are complicated. They're hard to do. No. You know, Brian, you're shaking your head. They're not really that hard to do, right?
No, and especially with Windows Live Writer, it's just a godsend for me.
Yeah, I think that kind of changed the playing field when that software, at least for me, going in and using those editors or doing it otherwise never really worked for me. Live Writer is so easy and so intuitive. Yeah. It makes it. Andrew, are you using or have you used Live Writer in the blogging that you're doing?
Yeah, I'm one of the people who sort of resisted a little bit going across to using LiveWriter. My background is very much being the HTML guy, you know, the guy who's getting dirty in the code behind the web page and whatnot. And you know, I still struggle these days to get my head around CSS. You know, the style sheets just does my head in. I really don't understand it. And, you know, I guess that sort of leads to, you know, when you start having a bit of a look around, you know, Blogger and WordPress and the like give you their default templates. But, you know, if you want to then go and generate your own look and your own feel, you know, you then got to find something that's going to help you do that, especially when you're not code savvy.
Right. Yeah. Although I do find WordPress today has pretty good default templates that you can use that work for the majority of the people. Is that true or not?
I'd agree with that. Bloggers, being the Google offering, is very similar. But I mean, if you want something that doesn't look, you know, like it's come out of the cookie cutter,
yeah.
You know, you need to sort of start looking for other options. And you know, I think you can do it with the products like Dreamweaver and Front Page and products like that. But you know, there are a few more coming to market now that that help you generate your blog as if you're just using Word or PowerPoint or something like that, and then you just get a single file that you can upload out to your blog host, which is kind of nice.
Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, with Windows Live Writer, it makes generating content extremely easy. And then if you use it with WordPress and you want to tweak things later, you can go in and into that editor and, you know, dive right into the HTML and, you know, tweak it how you want.
Yeah, a pretty easy tool. So I encourage folks, start free, right? Blogger and WordPress are free. WordPress doesn't allow advertisements. Blogger allows AdSense. So if you think you want to use AdSense and put some ads on there that are not necessarily controlled by you but kind of tailored to your format, if that's something you want to try out, Blogger is the way to go on that. WordPress, if you just want to start a blog, WordPress has, I think, has more themes that you can use to kind of change the look and feel of your website. The reason I brought this up is because Carrie came to me this week and said, hey, I'd like to make my blog more like yours. She's on Blogger. And I said, well, okay, so the rules start changing because now, you know, we have to move to a hosted ISP, make a little more of a financial commitment. And literally, I pay $4 a month. So it's not like it's a huge outlay of cash. It's not the best service in the world. You know, I'm on a server with a ton of other websites. So I share bandwidth from that perspective. And in theory, I'm supposed to get unlimited bandwidth and unlimited storage space, but yeah, I pay for that in bandwidth, or at least in speed. But then move on. I'd encourage folks to, you know, start free, try it out, get going, then start moving into the progression of, okay, do I want to buy my own domain, my own URL, right? Do I want to mine was Jim, I think jimtheaverageguy.wordpress.com that I started with. And then I bought theaverageguy.tv and just basically redirected, right? I mean, it's pretty simple. Just redirect that URL. So if anybody goes to theaverageguy.tv, now it goes to that, and in this case, actually, it goes to my hosted provider. But I could have my own URL at a WordPress or at a Blogspot and not necessarily have to pay for the hosting. So there's some options out there. I guess I just encourage people to start slow and take little chunks. Don't try and have the – because you can you guys can confirm this, right? You can get sucked into this blogging stuff, and it will absolutely take over your life.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in line with what you were just saying, Jim, Blogger will give you the ability to host your personal domain name without having to hand over any coin for the hosted service. So you can do some DNS smarts through your hosting provider, your domain name provider, and point that across to the Blogger platform, and then configure your Blogger account to accept that domain name. That's what I do with one of mine.
Right.
So I have a hosting provider as well, which I use WordPress for my parents' business to present their content. But for my personal stuff, I'm still using Blogger.
Sure, but you kind of hide it in the background, right?
Yeah. From a network perspective, it's pretty much the same as what you do with WordPress.
Yeah.
Except the back-end engine's Blogger instead.
Right. So you can get one started. Almost cost you nothing. I mean, you can really start for zero. Even on the podcasting side, you know, we use Podomatic, podomatic.com, or I use that to host these podcasts. And I was actually able to start all three podcasts on their free account. Thankfully, the Home Tech and the Fitness Tech grew, and I had to buy some bandwidth. So I spend about $10 a month for the extra bandwidth. But it made sense to, instead of trying to come up with all my own podcasting stuff, you know, the player and hosting and stuff, Podomatic built all that stuff for me, and I could easily just jump in there, create some content, upload it to their servers. And I get those, if you're out at theaverageguy.tv, you'll see the players out there. And they're pretty nice looking. And so, again, you can start a podcast for free. You don't even, if you want to sit down with some guys or just yourself and record some stuff, you could do that as well. Brian or Andrew, besides this, have you guys dabbled at all much in the podcasting space?
This is my first time, is this show, so I certainly listen to a lot of them, but I've never been on one before.
And it's not too traumatic, is it?
No, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It's just
pretty nervous at first, but you know, once you get the hang of it, and
yeah,
you know, it comes a lot more smoothly.
Andrew, have you done any podcasting before?
I had a cameo appearance on the Home Server Show. I think you had a week out when you had a business conference or something, Jim. Yeah. But this is my first that I've had a couple of repeat performances. So.
Yeah, and you're doing great. It's easy to do. Hey, speaking of new folks, so Christian just joined us. Christian, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you here.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. Hey, bring your volume up a little bit for me. And welcome Christian's dad, who's sitting behind me. I love it. I think Christian's dad. We're gonna do a Christian's dad show, by the way, where it's just Christian's dad, Christian and Christian's dad, and we're gonna let Christian's dad rail on me for the whole show. Christian, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Hang in there.
Yeah, good. Thanks for. I know you've had a busy day. We moved the podcast on you and such, so I appreciate you coming in. All right. Well, we had been talking about podcasting, and Christian, you're the blogging and podcasting, and you're kind of the brains behind all the things that we do here at theaverageguy.tv. We were talking at it from just kind of a basic podcasting, a basic blogging perspective. So you missed all the good parts of the show because it's way beyond what you do. So you missed the good stuff. Hey, I want to talk a little bit of news as we move forward. I think there's been some interesting things that have happened from a technology perspective. The first was, did anybody see the Jeopardy? Has that actually aired? But the Jeopardy with Watson
aired.
I think that aired today, right? Or yesterday?
Yesterday night.
And it looks like
that's the Jeopardy against the IBM mainframe, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that's always been kind of a little cheesy, you know, this idea of a computer against the human. And they did this with chess, you know, what, about 20 years ago? And the computer beat the chess champion. But chess has very defined rules. Jeopardy is a hard it's a hard game because the questions are very tricky, right? I mean, it's what do they call it? In language? No, what's the term they use? There's lots of puns. There's lots of sometimes they embed little jokes in there. There's play on, you know, the play
very
on
loaded, aren't they?
Yeah, and sometimes there's double meanings associated in those questions, and so. Taking on those questions in natural language queries has not been easy for the computer. And so in this case, though, it looks like Watson kind of took away, I mean, took Jennings, who was the reigning champion, just kind of out of the whole show. Christian, you're kind of on the edge of all that is technology out there, cutting edge stuff. What do you think about IBM's work with this? And have we reached a level of AI that is more sophisticated than we've ever seen before?
Yeah, I think we've definitely progressed from, I mean, what we would have been able to do even like 3 or 4 years ago. And a lot of people were talking about how, I don't know if you guys watched it, but at the very last question, the question was it was something along the lines, it asked what city in the United States had an airport, had like two airports named after World War II significant historical properties. I don't remember what the exact question was. It was along those lines. And the computer bid, it was like the final question where you bid whatever money you have. Computer bid like 900 on it. And it answered Toronto, which obviously isn't even a city in
the United States.
US. So yeah. Obviously the whole IBM team looked like someone had just smacked them in the face. and that's why a lot of people are like, oh, this is crazy. But I think, sure, I honestly don't know, but obviously it means that there was some line somewhere in the program that wasn't as solid as they thought it was. But, I mean, if you think about it, just the fact that it was – queuing Toronto as a possible answer is significant because that means it's using GPS and trying to make relationships worldwide instead of just trying to find some picky way to answer the question. So I think with the technology and GPS, and I'm sure there's programs that they've written as part of the computer to source from Wikipedia and all sorts of other feeds to get keywords and indexes, all that stuff is kind of really coming together. So I don't think a computer a couple of years ago would have an easy of a time answering that because it didn't have the GPS functionality. But even though it still didn't get it right, I think it's definitely moving. It's progressing. There's still a lot more that can be done in terms of just refining some of the quirky bugs and some of the odd answers, as we saw in the program. But yeah, it's definitely a development, probably something that, you know, for us, like, who really cares? No one's buying their $1 million supercomputer, but it just shows you that the level of complexity is increasing.
Christian, I'm not saying no one at this point. I think this is going to – there's going to be some CIOs, some CEOs who see this and say, this is impressive. I mean, obviously IBM has figured out how to query – and do it very quickly. Now, IBM spent just more than the four of us will ever make in our lifetimes times 10, right? I mean, they spent a lot of money in R&D on this. But they're on to something here. And you know, is this the beginning of Skynet? I don't think so. But is it more than we've ever had before? In this BusinessInsider.com article, it says Watson, represented by a black tablet-like avatar, got 13 questions right before one of the flesh and blood challengers, and that was Jennings, answered correctly. The computer nailed the answers on an impressive variety of topics, ranging from architecture to biological science to classical music to Saturday Night Live. So and this is what you were talking about. However, Watson bungled the night's final question about a city and its largest airport named for a World War II hero, and a second airport named for a World War II battle. And it answered Toronto, and that was not right. So the answer was Chicago,
right?
Surprisingly, right? So, or maybe not surprisingly. And now it didn't bet very much, so it was pretty smart, right, to know, hey, I may not have this right, so I'm not going to wager very much on it.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Andrew, any thoughts? You know, you work for another company that does computer stuff. any thoughts from your side of the house? Is, you know?
Yeah, I guess
talk about.
I guess it gives us an incentive to do something special with a Superdome. I'm not sure. It's not really my part of the world.
Yeah.
I'm more at the base level stuff. You know, making sure there's a Windows system that's running for a service to deliver it over the top.
Sure.
But I'm sure we've got some guys who took a look at that and said, hey, that's something we need to have a think about too.
Yeah, I think it's a shot across the bow. I mean, I'll be honest. I work with Microsoft and Oracle and IBM in what I do. And this is a definite, at least in my opinion, this is a definite shot across the bow of IBM saying, because we have to remember, this is a computer not plugged into the internet. So they had to load all, you know, it had to be stored. All that stuff stored locally. Yeah, it was not able to pull any answers from the internet.
Impressive.
Yeah, and it had to do it fast enough. I mean, you got humans with those little clickers, and I'm sure Jennings was just clicking away, on that clicker, and the computer, you know, beat both those guys the first 13 questions. Anyways. Yeah, I'm interested in that. I think I'm looking forward to meeting with some IBM folks here over the next couple of weeks and talking about that, at least in what they're doing. So some good stuff.
Yeah, and isn't the computer, it's like the size of a full room or something like that?
Yeah, I know it's pretty
That's
big.
Huge.
It's a lot of blade servers, and to just be able to store all that data. These guys have been working on it for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I'm sure a lot of lessons were learned in this, and the ability to do what they did, Moore's Law will kick in, and that stuff will get smaller and smaller and smaller. I don't think we've seen the end of this, nor do I think we've seen the end of, I mean, this is IBM sticking itself out there in a risky position. If this had gone bad and Jennings would have whooped the computer, can you imagine, right? I mean, guys' jobs are on the line at IBM.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, some interesting tech out there in the real world, and it's just Jeopardy, but it was, I think, a great test of and a good...
It's just Jeopardy.
Yeah, but natural language queries are the way of the future. And, you know, think about a computer that could listen and understand, and I don't think we're far from this, right, with Google Translate. Listen to what you say, instantly translate, and then say it back to somebody, right? So it's the they've been talking about this on This Week in Google, this idea of a universal translator. I don't think we're too far away from that and that really breaking down some language barriers. So having a handheld device or maybe even your phone being able to do some stuff like that for you. So some interesting things. All right.
Yeah, and I think Google are pretty much one of the leaders in that too. I mean, I know with the Android phone, you can do some pretty good natural speak queries in it already. Some of them come back a little bit haphazardly, but you know, voice directions are just phenomenal. You know, you're saying, you know, navigate to my work address, and you know, it's pretty close to it most days.
Yeah.
Which and yeah, then it'll give you the option. It'll throw up your map and tell you where to go. Yeah, that's great.
Would sure you say make Gene Roddenberry happy?
Yeah, he you know he saw all this stuff, and I remember years ago. You know, I think about the old Star Trek Next Generation, and they had these little handheld things, right? And they were touching them, right? And there wasn't a. When that came out, there wasn't a device on the planet that could do that, right? We were barely working with stylists, and you know, desktops were still pretty archaic. And now to think we're doing that on our phones, right? I mean, I walk around half the day, and Andrew, I don't know if this goes on where you work, but half the day people are walking around with their head in their smartphones, you know, and they're not even watching where they're going. They're just looking heads down.
It's very asocial.
It's very Star Trek-ish from that. And Roddenberry had a vision into all that stuff, which is sometimes just scares me. Did he influence the technology or
you know, if you look at it, there's a lot of tech from Star Trek that, you know, has come to fruition in the real world. You know, the communicators, cell phone. They have their little pads, you know, that they read from. Well, now we have tablet PCs. And
Christian, you're going to solve warp drive, right?
Yeah.
No, speaking of warp drive. Man. Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say push to talk over the cellular network. I don't know if you guys get that in the US, but, you know, push to talk is, you know, that's got to be straight out of Star Trek. You know, press a button on the side of your cell phone. The next thing you know, you're talking to someone at the other end of it. That's
right. And anywhere they could be anywhere in the world if they're on the right network.
Yeah, correct.
You know, so guys, one more thing I want to cover before we move on. Motorola has made a lot of fanfare as of late about their Zoom tablets, and there's been a lot. You know, so the iPad came out last year and has really dominated the tablet market. There is no other tablet at this point, right? I mean, can I say that definitively? Is that fair? There's no other tablet in the market at this point for the most part. Okay, so nobody will argue with me. So Motorola wants to run in that space. It's going to run Android. It's going to look like the iPad. I mean, it's basically going to be the iPad running Android. Similar form factor, a lot of similarities. Now, it does have some enhancements that aren't in the current iPad, but look like they're going to be covered when the iPad 2 comes out either this spring or this summer.
Yeah, and it actually has true multitasking.
The Zoom does.
Yeah.
Okay. So similar to what Palm offered with the WebOS as opposed to the iOS and some multitasking environment. But basically very, very similar, right? So you're the CEO of this company, and there's been some leaked pricing, right? And you're the CEO of this company. Aren't you going to price the leaked prices have been $600 and $800 for these tablets, $600 for the Wi-Fi version, $800 for the 3G version. That's well above what the iPad. And when I say well, I say $100 for the Wi-Fi and $100 and maybe another $100 for the 3G, depending on the memory. Christian, let me throw this to you. You're the young consumer guy. Are you going to... You're going to go for a tablet that's new and unproven and $100 more than what's currently out there?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Andrew, are you gonna? Yeah, I know the answer. Yeah. I'm gonna get from you guys, right? No, it's this. Certainly, this tablet has to come out at the same price, right?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think if you're going to take on Apple, you got to be price competitive. You know what I mean, Apple have brought this thing to market that, you know, that they already got to market with the iPhone. So I think, you know, to scale up to the iPad, you know, the next generation can only be better. So I think they've got anyone else who's coming to market, and I mean, you know, HP included with their tablet, you know, I think it's going to be it's a big challenge. You know, does WebOS really scale up to the platform size? You know,
one of the
things I read this week, you know, Apple, you know, talking about going 7-inch with an iTab or iPad. So, you know, if they hit the 7-inch market, you know, does that mean they're capturing Asia as well? Because, you know, research says that Asia wants a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah, and HP is going to jump in the ring here this summer as well with the WebOS. I didn't mention that, and I'm a big WebOS fan, but it's the tablet space is about to get very, very crowded. I guess the question I have is, Apple already wrapped that up, or is there space for competition among tablets?
I think there's still competition.
Okay.
Well, with Android, you know, I mean,
I think Asus and HP are going to release a lot of stuff towards the summer that's going to put into contention with what's out there right now. I don't think this is going to be a static market by any means.
So you think the WebOS will be able to compete against the iOS?
Maybe not the WebOS specifically, but some of the Asus products I'm seeing are looking really attractive.
And are those Android based?
Actually, I think some of them are Windows 7 mobile, I think. I got to check.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
That would be interesting.
Andrew, yeah, we cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was going to say I was out at a do on Friday night last week after we recorded, and one of the guys pulled out a Samsung Galaxy Tab, and, you know, everyone was like, "Oh, is that a mini iPad?" So, you know, from a perception perspective, I think it's kind of like when, you know, the 4-inch smartphones hit the market. You know, oh, is that an iPhone? Well, no, it's not. It runs Android. You know, it's made by HTC. You know, whereas I think the way Apple came to market, I think whether or not the product is an iPad or not, I think people will still perceive it to be one until they know otherwise. So there's the whole perception reality thing going on.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what it is. I think, right, you know, if the form factor looks the same, then people think it's it. You know?
So it'll be the Kleenex, right? I mean, it'll be the aspirin of tablets. And are we moving in a direction in the next 10 years that are going to be dominated not by PCs but by tablets?
I would say so. Yeah, it's the PC is going the way of the dinosaur, it seems like, unfortunately. I mean, you're always going to have your gamers and, you know, at the office and stuff, but
Brian, I'll be honest with you. I can't blog or podcast on a tablet. I mean, I can't do what I do today for this show and for the blog on a tablet.
Right. I
mean, I'm not there yet with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, the keyboard's not the greatest.
Right. So I think there's always a place for a PC. Christian, from what you see, from your perspective, are we heading into the domain of the – is this the decade of the tablet, and do PCs take a back seat to tablets?
I don't know if they're going to take a back seat, but I like I said last podcast, this is a market that's going to exponentially grow, where we've gone from thinking about our PCs and then our phones. Then now we're starting to think about our PCs, then our tablets, then our phones. And then you're going to see that whole cycle flip, where you're going to see people think about their phones, then their tablets, and that they're going to think about mobile before what they're doing at home, is what it comes down to.
Go ahead.
So what is the most I can do on the most mobile platform is what people are going to be looking to do.
Do you think it goes in the order of phone, tablet, PC when people take on a priority of purchasing at this point?
Yeah, I think there's like an overlap area right now where some can function as both for some people. I think what separates the difference in need is how big of a screen you need. So I think mobile phones still hold the level of importance first, and then people who are like, oh, the screen is too small, tablet.
Okay. Any other thoughts on, guys, on mobile tablets, PCs, anything we talked about?
Yeah, I mean, I like my iPad a lot better just because of the screen real estate. So, I don't know.
How much time?
7 inches, I don't know.
Yeah, Brian, how much time are you spending on your iPad now, just roughly, versus your PC?
Well, I still like sitting here at Command Central most of the time. So, yeah. You know, I don't know, probably 5 hours a week maybe.
So for you, it's still novel.
I'm trying to get used to it and try to get into the mode where I can actually, you know, be productive on it. And yeah. like you're saying, I mean, you can't type on the thing. I mean, it's pretty yeah. difficult. So, I like my big keyboard and, like I said, you know, my 4 monitors up, and that's what I need.
Andrew,
old habits are hard to break.
Yeah,
you know?
No, for sure. Andrew, you bring in a MacBook Air in chat.
We've been looking around at the moment. One of my wife's friends gave her an iPad sleeve for Christmas, which was kind of ironic because she doesn't have an iPad. So we're sort of looking for something to put in it, and you have a big oops.
Yeah,
and you look at say the MacBook Air. 11-inch, which is fairly comparable in size, and if you've got one of those things in, you know, lid down hibernate, you know, you lift the lid and it's pretty much up and running like that. It's pretty, you know, fairly impressive thing, and you know, we're waiting for the second generation to come out because I believe I've read that there's a few heat issues with it and whatnot. But you know, from a form factor perspective, something like the MacBook Air is pretty hard to beat if you want something that's small and portable and has a keyboard on it.
Now I have that HP DM1Z, right? Did I get that right? That's coming. It actually shipped yesterday. So I ordered it. It took a week to ten days.
You did order it, huh?
Yeah, we pulled the trigger, and I thought it would be one of those things I'd order and it would ship right away. Well, I think it still had to be manufactured. So they manufactured it. I'm sure it's shipping from China. And it's on its way over here, I hope, at this point. But I'm kind of hoping for some of that from a Windows side. So, right, it's a small 11-inch notebook. It won't have solid state, which I think I may add to it at some point, you know, to get faster, more portable speed on that. But I'm kind of hoping for some very quick boot up, long battery life from the Windows side.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, that's probably what the direction we'll end up going in. I mean, we still haven't had a release date for that model machine out here.
Okay.
But, you know, anecdotally, you read, you know, sort of 15, 20 second startup times from hit the button to having a stable OS when you're running an SSD in them, and that's pretty good for Windows.
Yeah. Christian, what do you run? You take your laptop to school, right, for what you do. What are you running on your laptop at school?
That's Windows 7 Ultimate, too.
And what kind of hardware?
Asus Netbook.
Okay.
1000HE. It's got the Intel Atom going on.
Which Atom processor's in there?
That's the 280.
And
so
how do you like the performance of that?
It works unbelievable. I mean,
really?
Browsing the web. And I mean,
for what you do.
What are you going to do? Open up and play Crysis on a netbook? No. So I mean, I have it out when I'm
you
doing chem labs, Word docs open, emails in and out, a little bit of BIOS hex setting. It does everything. I mean, and it runs. It doesn't. Windows 7 actually makes it more snazzier than XP, which originally came on there. And that was the 280 processor was the overclocked hot deal compared to the 270 at the time. Then they came out with the 450 and the Pine Trail and all that. So I
think
it's,
my daughter has the 455 or the 450, one of
right,
those.
Which were the dual cores. So, I mean, this is a hyper-threaded single core, but it's a prize, no doubt.
And we put Windows 7 on her. I put Windows 7 on her her laptop as well. We took XP off and put Windows 7 on there to get her a little better performance as well. Well, it's a very interesting time as things get smaller and yet they're getting bigger. Our monitors, you know, remember guys a couple years ago when a 19-inch CRT monitor was huge? And Christian, maybe you don't remember those days, but
yes, I do.
Okay.
not that bad.
I'm just joking with you. And today, you know, I've got a 26-inch LCD on my desk that is just gigantic. And so that gets smaller while the PCs. Brian, since we're talking about smaller, and Andrew, how are you doing on time? Do you need to?
I'm good at the moment.
Okay, good. Yeah. You got a new Mac Mini, and that's a pretty small, right? It's just a little hockey puck. You've been a PC guy for a long time,
right?
But you got this Mac Mini. Give us a quick rundown. You've had a couple weeks now to mess with it, and I told you in the notes. I'm really looking for your opinion and not a how-to, you know, right. On this. But give me your opinion of that Mac Mini after having it a couple weeks.
Well, like I think I said this last week, the 2 gigabytes was definitely the, you know, the minimum amount for running OS X Snow Leopard, or OS 10, I think is the correct way to pronounce it.
10.6.
Yeah, so... Anyway, I upgraded it to 8 gigabytes, and there's just nothing to it. You just take off the bottom and swap out the sticks, and you're good to go. So, I have had Mac computers in the past, but I didn't really get into them as much as I have Windows, and this is my first Mac for a good 10 years now, so you know, it's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, I think, you know, as far as learning the OS and everything. But I mean, it's almost like when you're using it, you try to make it more difficult than actually what it is. I mean, they make everything in the operating system so easy. I mean, installing programs is insanely easy, and I was trying to make it difficult, you know, and that was kind of a strange situation for me. As far as OS X, though, the thing that bugs me the most is that the, you know, like the minimize, maximize, and close buttons are on the upper left side of the screens, and that takes some definitely hard to get used to. I know that Linux did that too with their latest Ubuntu, but there was a fix, and you could actually hack it so those buttons would be on the right.
Go back over to the right side for you.
Yeah, and I'm hoping I can find a way to do that with OS X too. So.
Are you? So you write a lot. Are you doing any of your blog writing on it at this point, or is it just purely kind of a I'm trying this thing out? I mean, are you using it for any production work at all in your environment?
Not yet. No. I'm slowly but surely, you know, easing myself into it, I think. So.
And if you did use it, what I assume, and I really don't know here. I'm not trying to be antagonistic either along a Mac perspective, but I imagine there's a Live Writer equivalent for the Mac of some kind that.
Actually, unfortunately, no. There's nothing good out there that.
That you've found yet. I'm sure there's, you know, from a software perspective, certainly there has to be an equivalent, you know, blog writing.
Well, I mean, I've even talked to, you know, users of Mac who've been using Mac for years, and they say there's really nothing good out there for it. So it'll just be directly in WordPress.
Yeah. So as well as not having any good blogging tools, it looked like it doesn't have any good BIOS tools either, is what they're saying in chat. Can you?
Oh, is that right?
Christian, can you do?
What do you know about that?
Can you do any BIOS modifications on a Mac?
There are some tools. I mean, if you're doing in a hex editor and like an assembler, you could do it. But like specific programs designed for like a Phoenix BIOS or like an Award BIOS, the EXEs probably wouldn't run unless you emulated it under Wine.
Okay. You're the BIOS guy, so I just thought I'd throw that over to you since they threw that in chat. So, Brian, anything I mean, so you're 2 weeks into the experiment. Is that something you're going to hold on to? I mean, after 2 weeks, you're thinking you're going to switch over to that for more of your production work? You're going to just use it to stay kind of current with what's going on from a macOS standpoint? I mean, what are you thinking right now?
Well, right now, I guess I'm thinking I wouldn't make the complete switch ever. I mean, I'm just too loyal to Microsoft. Call me a fanboy if you want, but I basically, just to keep up on, you know, how to integrate it into a Windows environment like I have here. I was talking with Dave last week, and we were Dave from the Home Server Show, and we were talking about bringing back his website, adding Apple. So I've been taking notes and getting kind of a queue of articles ready for it. But yeah, overall, I think that's going to be a box that I just to stay current and keep up with. I don't think it's going to be my main production box.
All right.
But hey, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's
stranger things have happened.
Yeah, well, there's no shame in that. I'm just kind of interested. I know you need it for, you know, you kind of need it for some of the how-to stuff. Andrew, are you switching back and forth between PC and Mac?
No, we don't have a Mac in the house at the moment. So it's my sister-in-law uses one for a photograph editing and whatnot using Aperture. But we use the Windows product. I'm Mac curious. So I'd like to get one, so I know what I'm talking
about. That's a great way to say it, by the way.
Yeah, so, you know, so I've got a little bit of, I guess, educated insight when people ask me about it.
Sure.
But the hardware's so damn expensive to buy it new.
Yeah, there is a price to pay for entry into that. Christian, do you have any Mac in your house at all?
Just my iPod, that's it.
Okay. And would you, if you had, if money wasn't an option and you were buying a laptop, would you go Mac or PC?
I wouldn't have a problem with a Mac, but I'd still get a PC.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, I mean, well, I have no beef with the new Mac Pros or anything like that. It's just
it's all ecosystem based, I think, in some ways. And I'm in the boat where I'm so used to the Windows ecosystem as far as software and how stuff works. It's just a huge learning curve. I have a G4. I mean, I can't run Snow Leopard. It stops at Leopard because it doesn't have the Intel chip in it. But it's just a learning curve, and I don't know if I necessarily want to learn all the tricks over again on the Mac side. And if somebody gave me a Mac Air, I probably wouldn't give it back. Right? But certainly I'm probably not going to spend my money in the Mac ecosystem, with the exception of maybe an iPod Touch. I love that platform, and I gave my old one, I had a first gen one that I gave to my daughter to use as an iPod, pass that down. I think when the new, there you go, Andrew's showing us his
plastic.
Is that a video?
That's iPod a classic.
That's the old classic. And I had a white one. I had a 20 gig, is it 30 or 20? I can't remember. But the white block kind of brick looking ones that I got at an Oracle Open World about 5 years ago, they were giving those things away. And, you know, the scroll wheel and that's just a workhorse. And Brian's, that's your Touch, right, Brian?
Yeah.
So I think there's some new iPods coming out, you know, with the 5, with version 5 of the phone. I think the iPods, the Touches will probably be refreshed, and that may be something I looked at. All right, guys, we need to move on quickly because we're going a little bit long. Andrew, you had mentioned in the notes a WYSIWYG editor. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Since we talked tonight.
And this sort of ties back into what we were talking about before with, you know, setting up a blog and, you know, from my perspective, finding it a real pain to get under the covers with style sheets and the like. One of the things that I was really struggling with was getting WordPress to do exactly what I wanted it to do. And once I started having a bit of a look around, I came across a product called Artisteer. These guys are over at artisteer.com. What their product does, it basically gives you like a Microsoft Word or a PowerPoint type interface to be able to generate your templates to throw up into WordPress or Blogger or Joomla or any of the content management sites. It's really really nice product. And, you know, from a dollar perspective, for me, it's something that's affordable too. You know, the one that does WordPress and Blogger's around about $50 US. And then you can go up to the standard, what they call their standard edition, which means you can do your Joomla and Drupal and some of the other CMS platforms. But it means you don't need to know code, or you can do the whole thing by drag and drop and menus, and at the end of it you just hit a button and export it out to a file that you upload. And for me that was perfect. You know, I was trying to put together a website in WordPress using Pages, and my coding's just so rubbish these days, and this thing just, you know, left me with a final product that looked exactly how I wanted it to look without having to touch a single line of code.
So this phenomenal. This helps you not just from a blogging perspective of what you're putting up there, but it helps you design the entire site?
Yeah, it's to design the whole site. It doesn't help you with the content, but okay, to be able to actually get the look and the feel without using a template or trying to find somebody else's work that you like the look of and grab their template, you can just do the whole thing from scratch. And okay, it's really nice. And they give you what do they call it? They call it suggestions, I think, where you can get themes suggested, and then where you put your menus and where you put your sign-in box, and whether or not in Blogger you show the banner, or if you don't show the banner from Blogger. It's quite a nice product.
Christian, have you had any experience with a product like this for all the web stuff that you do?
Yeah, a lot of the built-in WordPress and other kind of Joomla, they all use built-in, what you see is what you get kind of stuff. So,
okay. Andrew, is there a cost on this? You'd mentioned $50. Is that?
Yeah. The home, they've got an academic version, which is $50, and they've got a standard edition that's $130.
So from a complexity standpoint, if you know, 1 to 5, 1 being easy, 5 being very complex.
Look, I'd probably give it a 2. I mean,
oh, really?
If you can use Microsoft Word,
yeah.
With this thing, it looks and feels like a Microsoft product. You know, it's almost got a ribbon bar on it, and you know, at the end of it, you've got a theme for your blog or your website that shows. That looks exactly how you want it to look without having to get under the covers with the code.
So one click deployment to the website then once I've got
you can do that, or you can export it to a zip file and then upload the zip file if it's WordPress.
Okay.
Which is nice. Saved me so much time.
Yeah.
It'll even design your buttons for your website.
Wow.
Which I thought was kind of neat.
Well, so for someone who's wanting to maybe monkey around with their templates and get a little more control, especially on the free version of WordPress or Blogger, where you don't get a lot of control, right? This could be, and you can use this with the free versions.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done a couple of Blogger sites with it, and I've done a couple of WordPress ones with non WordPress hosted sites.
And US company, or is that? Do you know?
I think they are. I think they are in the US. Their pricing's all in the US. Here we go.
All in US dollars.
Yeah, they're in Seattle.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Well, and interesting.
Company's called Extensoft.
All right. We'll put that link in the show notes so folks can take a peek at it. I think that's a good, especially in light of what we talked about early on in the show, if folks want to take their blog to the next level, this might be. And again, this is where it gets more expensive. You don't have to do it, but if you want to get some of the nice looking stuff that's in there. I know I've struggled with some buttons, and poor Christian, you know, I do all these changes to the site and then I take it down. You know, and I'm learning. I mean, I'm your average guy. I'm not a code junkie. I'm not really a designer. So I just try things out, and I don't really have a test environment for the site, so I just try it on production, and then, you know, have to say, Christian, can you fix the website? So he's been really good about that. Christian, do you still now let me change the subject real quick. Are you still having problems with your beast?
No. Oh, no. Okay. All right. The solution is at hand. Crazily enough, it turns out, even despite passing MemTest 86, that one of the four sticks of RAM was what was causing sleep prevention. So I got rid of that stick, and I also went over to a new, much quicker hard drive, and it's looking good. Much better. Sleep works quicker, and that ROG Connect thing is sweet.
Good feeling to have your main PC. I mean, you got that for Christmas, but good feeling to have your PC working, isn't it?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That.
So did you go for a clean build this time around, Christian, or did you do a backup and a restore again to the new disk?
I just used Windows Home Server to restore to the new disk. It was great.
Yeah.
Good. Well, glad that that worked out. I think maybe I was even chatting with you when you figured that out, but I was wondering if that was really it. You know, sometimes you think you've got it and you really don't. You know, I always feel sorry for the average guy and trying to troubleshoot PC problems. Most of them just don't have a clue what to do. Certainly most folks wouldn't have gone to the extent that you went to troubleshoot that, to get it fixed.
Yeah. I mean, that was nothing easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you spent a lot of time on that, man.
So
yeah, it was like, well, no obvious, diagnostic tool showed that the stick was bad. So when MemTest passes, it's like, okay, and, you know, and it still turned out to be that, so.
How did you determine it was a bad stick then?
Because I figured, you know, because for whatever reason, one day when I was having problems coming out of Hibernate, and something wasn't right, and I shut down and reboot, and I couldn't boot any of my drives. And I'm like, something is just weird. I don't know if it's the particular hard drive failing, but neither hard drive was letting me boot things up right. So I just took all sticks out but one and ran backups off the home server and just started putting more sticks in until I'm like, oh, now sleep doesn't work with this stuff.
Process of elimination.
Now, yeah. Christian, we call that thing the beast, and there was a question in chat. Somebody put a question about why. Real quick, give the rundown on that box of yours that we're talking about.
We're looking at a 6-core AMD Phenom 1090T at 3.6 gigahertz with turbo core enabled, 8 gigabits of G-Skill Ripjaws at 1600 megahertz, 78724 RAM timings on an Asus Crosshair 4 Formula IV motherboard, and that's the latest with the 890FX chipset, so the latest, greatest goodies with AMD in mind. It's got the onboard gigabit NIC with ROG Connect for external diagnostics and overclocking on a netbook or any other device that supports USB. It's got a regular 1.5 Seagate drive, gets about 100 megabits per second read-write on average in HD Tune Pro. And there's a new beastly XFX 6950 graphics card, which is unbelievable to say the least.
Yeah.
You see it on a DirectX 11 benchmark.
So
we should put some pictures of that up on the site maybe.
Yeah,
no, I will. I'm just fighting my own schedule here.
Yeah, that is why we call it the beast. So, you know, there was Christian, as you were rattling that off, Andrew was giving the over-the-head signal. And I think, you know, that went over some folks' heads. But let's just say it's fast, it's big, it's powerful. I mean, it really is kind of top-of-the-line, state-of-the-art for what's out there today.
It's like Watson for the home user.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, my kids spent – my 17-year-old spent a bunch of money this summer after working at a pool all summer, and he bought himself a, you know, $2,500 that he put together himself. Very similar to what you have there. You know, they've – is it the Crossfire video cards that you can put together?
Yeah, you can Crossfire those.
So, and they've just got monster boxes, and in the summer, I just can't keep the basement cool. So they heated up pretty well. I have two of those kinds of boxes down in the basement. The kids are right next to each other, and so that's a nice setup. I run a Core i3, and my main PC is a Core i3 that just kind of sips the power. For what I do is just enough for the blogging and podcasting and the various Word apps that I need. That works just fine too. And so you, as the average user, you don't have to have all that stuff. But for a guy like you, that's pretty cool to have a pretty powerful beast.
Yeah. Although it does draw some power, that's for sure.
Yeah, I bet it does. Have you put a power meter on the end? What do they call those things?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have you put a kilowatt meter. Yeah, kilowatt. There we go. Have you done that?
Yeah.
And what's the draw?
Let's see what it is.
Do you remember?
Right. Well, I get – it's kind of weird. See, right now it's –
I wish we had the video for this right now.
I have an APC backup unit that has, like, everything tied in. So
oh, good.
It's reading it off the APC backup unit. So we're talking a finished charge netbook, a 24-inch Dell monitor, a pretty bright light, and the beast, and those things on the APC is using about 300-ish watts.
All right.
And then if I kick this box up into like some intense 3D game or application, I'm getting close to 400. But that's with everything running. So if I have just the monitor on and the computer on, and I'm just doing minimal stuff, I can get around 200. If I'm lucky. So I gotta work on that myself, because compared to the last box I had, a lot. So when the electric bill comes in, it's like, okay.
Yeah, your dad's like, Christian, you need to shut that down 4 hours out of the
day. Yeah, pretty much. Well, yeah, that was the problem. Sleep was never working, so it was just sitting on. He got like $160 electric bill. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, what makes that impressive, right, is that AMD, and it's got 6 cores in it, right? Mm-hmm. And as opposed to – so a Core i7, let's just – that's probably the most widely known Intel chip that's top of the line. That has 4 cores, and those are hyper-threaded, so it acts like 8, right? Is that right?
If it's Intel, yeah. Okay. AMD doesn't have hyper-threading.
But so how does that compare if I have 8 cores in my Intel, 8 in theory, right, 4 hyper-threaded to 8, and I'm putting out that up against your 6 cores.
Yeah, in comparison, this 6 core matches about an i7-950, I think, which is 4 cores hyper-threaded, and that's a sweet deal CPU, but I mean, that's like that price, the introductory price for that CPU is like 200 more than this is, so for the same. So for like 250 less, I'm getting the same, if not more, performance because those values don't take into account turbo core and all those other goodies. So
yeah, there's been some folks in chat we've been talking a little bit about. They're wanting some specs. I think we talked about that in one of the shows that we did back around Christmas time. So if you want to get some more info or go back, you can all our podcasts are back. I still have everything out there. So if you want to go back and look. Look around. It was maybe you got it for Christmas, right? So it was either maybe the podcast after Christmas or after New Year, one of those two, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So pay it. And let me just reemphase, there's a price point difference here between that Intel and AMD, and so you're getting similar performance at a much lower price point with the AMD chip, right?
Yep.
Okay. Good stuff. Yeah.
And no Sandy Bridge issues.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
We'll leave that for the BYOB guys over at the homeschoolshow.com. We spent a lot of time last night talking about some of the hardware issues around the home server. The BYOB guys have been kind of beating that Sandy Bridge topic. So if you're interested, if you're not a home server show guy and you want to catch up on all the hardware geek stuff, the BYOB, build your own box, guys do that better than anybody. homeservershow.com will get you there. Guys, we're a little long tonight, so I'm gonna wrap this up. Andrew, I appreciate you again making it in this week and the content. I appreciate you taking your lunch break to do that. And Christian, I appreciate you joining us late. I know your schedule is just nuts. Thursdays work best. And we typically record, if you're listening to this for the first time, we typically record Wednesday nights, 7 o'clock Central. I'm sorry, Thursday nights. It's just been the last two Wednesdays. Thursday night, 7 o'clock Central, here at theaverageguy.tv/live. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Jay Collison, you can get all the updates I usually post when the show times are. And so you can do that. If you're not a Twitter person, for whatever reason, I found out last night there's a bunch of folks that just haven't joined Twitter yet. I actually am starting a new post that I'm going to try and keep on top that will have the latest show times. So if you come to theaverageguy.tv and look at the first couple posts, you can kind of see the schedule of what's going on, not only with the home tech show, but with the fitness tech show and the financial tech show as well. You know, I've done some things as well with iTunes, and so we're fully embedded in iTunes. If you search for the home tech show out there, you'll see it as well. And so if you have not subscribed to our RSS feed and put this show somehow in automatic mode, and you're thinking, God, I don't want to have to go to the site every time I want to hear it, although we've got some fantastic players on the site now, so you can always do that, but you can also subscribe via RSS. That is a great way to do that. Guys, I started a new Facebook group this week called The Average Guy Network. And so if you just go out to Facebook and type in the search, The Average Guy Network, that is instead of me posting all the advertising that I do for the show through my profile, I'm going to start every time we put a post out there, I'm just going to submit the link to this The Average Guy Network Facebook group. That is an open group and anybody can join it. So if you want to go out and get kind of that notification in Facebook whenever I make a – I always post the podcast out there as a blog, and so that will get you – if you want to know when the shows are new. Facebook is another way to do that, and that's probably the easiest way. You don't have to friend me if you don't want me to be your friend. That's okay too. You can just go out to that group, and you don't have to be my friend, and you can still get notified when the show comes out. One more reminder, the show is, you know, we do the show free for everybody. It's subscription free, although it's not free to produce. And we put a little non-invasive donate deals button out on the site, and so you can do one of two things. If you want to help support just the what I pay in bandwidth each month, you can click on that, and I've got a few advertisers that you can go through. Doesn't cost you any more. Sometimes it'll cost you a little less, and if you just feel like you want to donate to the show a buck or two, we pay about $10 a month for bandwidth and all that other stuff, and that just goes towards the cause. So one more thing, I did add a live button if you guys didn't see it. One of the listeners over at the Home Server Show, he goes by EZPC. His name is Issa. He developed or designed this little flashing the average guy live on the air, or on what does it say? It says on air live. If you click on that, it will take you to the live page. So before, I didn't have any way to get to the live page except by typing theaverageguy.tv/live. Now you can get to the live page through that link. All right. Sorry for all that laundry. Oh, The Average Guy, you can get a hold of me, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. One more thing. Had to get all that stuff in before we go. So, guys, appreciate you coming out tonight, and we'll do it all over again next Thursday, I think, at least at this point, next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central, and do the math for whatever time zone you're in. You're always welcome to join us in chat. And we'll leave the chat room open for a little bit if those guys that are listening to the show live. We had a good turnout tonight, so appreciate those of you who are in chat. A good lively bunch out there. We got a bunch from what you said. You guys are welcome to stay around and hack each other up in chat if you want. Otherwise, guys, have a good evening or a good afternoon, depending upon what – or maybe a good morning, depending upon what part of the world you're in. And we appreciate you coming out and listening. Thanks for coming out.